This is Aviator Cast, episode 98.
Oh, you're a different pilot now.
Thinking of that first time we flew together, I'm just like, oh my gosh, pretty funny.
Well, but guess what? We're here now.
Yep.
This is the pilot needed to show up, by the way.
Yeah, it is.
And he did.
Just 2 weeks too late.
Calling all aviators, pilots, flight sim enthusiasts, and aviation lovers. You've landed at Aviator Cast. Join us weekly in our efforts to become better masters of the air through interviews, refreshers, lessons, training topics, simulator setup, hangar talk, news, and more. Buckle up and prepare yourself for this week's episode of Aviator Cast. Pre-flight complete, fuel on board, and flight plan filed. Let's kick the tires and light the fires. Here's your humble host, Chris Palmer.
Welcome, 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 aviators. You've landed at Aviator Cast. My name is Chris Palmer. While I may have a big microphone here at Aviator Cast and plenty to share regarding aviation, the truth is that none of my so-called skill or knowledge came easy. I was never a prodigy or a top student, but I always pushed myself hard. What drove me to get where I am? Passion. Passion for flight, passion for people, passion for the process. And thus, that passion has turned me into a pilot, at least to some extent. So welcome to this, the 98th episode of Aviator Cast. It's interesting we're coming up on that 100th. We'll have to do something very special. This podcast, as always, is brought to you by Angle of Attack, a flight training media production studio, which I run, and lots of great stuff coming up in the future. So if you've never been with us at Aviator Cast before, I'll tell you a little bit more about it. If you have, stand by. You guys know the drill. So Aviator Cast is all about aviation passion. This is where, on a regular basis, you can get a little injection of that aviation passion. And the podcast medium works quite well because if you're on a commute or you're mowing the lawn or you're doing some other activity where you can't actually view a video, this gives you a chance to at least put your mind in the aviation for a little bit and, again, get that injection of passion. We do that by bringing in different people from the industry and doing interviews with our Hangar Talk episodes. Today is kind of a hybrid of a Hangar Talk episode where I talk with an instructor that I learned from, and we talk about my commercial training and what that experience was like. So it's kind of half and half. We also give you insight into the industry. What are the new things going on? What great things are coming up? An example of that would be Basic Med, which is the new third-class medical for pilots that reduces a lot of the restrictions put on pilots from a medical standpoint. So that may be the first time you actually heard of that. And that is a great opportunity to get back in aviation if you had a medical issue or you had a medical issue that was preventing you from financially getting in because it took so many tests to prove to the FAA you were healthy. In other words, we give you the latest and greatest on the industry, things that really affect you as a pilot in terms of your ability or freedom to fly. So we try to update you on those big things. Maybe you've been out of aviation for a while. Maybe you found out about Basic Med. You're excited to get back into things and you just need to reignite that flame, get those thought juices running again. That is a big thing we do here as well. And you can definitely get that flame lit again. And maybe you're just getting the courage to fly. Maybe you're investigating how this whole training process works, what the career opportunities are like in aviation. You can gain a lot of those little pieces from here. But again, it all goes back to the beginning. We do all of that with a passion for aviation. So on today's episode, we are doing part two of the commercial pilot experience that I had, and I'm titling this one Professional Always. Now, I'm going to be going into the next episode, and they're talking about my actual check ride experience, but there is still so much to share about what has happened between the time that I left California for Utah and then came back from Utah to California to finish up my commercial rating. Now, I am an Alaskan, and so I was down there actually doing my training outside of Alaska, seeking good weather, happened to run into just so many roadblocks along the way, things that I know so many of you experience yourself. In a way, I'm actually very grateful that my commercial process was not smooth at all. It was not smooth at all. It was very difficult. I'm very grateful for that because I can empathize with what you listeners go through on a regular basis. It just so happened that for me, it seemed like it was everything all at once. And it's not over yet. So in this episode, building off of what happened in part one, I go over what happened after the first time in California. So I had gone up to Utah. I had flown up there, got more time in the aero, came back down to California, and faced even more challenges. So let's get into it. Let's get into part two of the commercial training with Michael Phillips.
Now, a special Hangar Talk segment.
All right, everybody, we are honored to have back with us Michael Phillips for another round. How you doing, Michael?
Wonderful. Thank you, sir.
Great. So we are going to dive right into this again. So kind of in between our time together, week one there in Camarillo with you, and coming back to where you were, I had gone to Utah for several weeks. This is kind of pre-planned to be with family, to show off the new baby, to have a lot of fun and meet a lot of people. What ended up happening is this actually became a continuation and an extension of my training, where I was again working to find gaps in the weather to fly up there. I ended up finding Axiom Aviation up in Ogden, and they did a great job providing the Piper Aero that was there that I was able to fly for several hours. I think I probably ended up putting 6 or 7 hours with those guys up in Ogden. So they did a great job. If you're in Utah or that area, they are definitely a school to check out. One of the best sessions I had up there in the airplane alone was just doing power off 180s. It's not as busy as, say, Camarillo or Oxnard even. And so I could essentially do them all day. And so I went up for 2 hours, and for 2 hours, I did nearly 20 power off 180s and just really got to know the airplane. And kind of a nice thing that happened there was the wind actually switched too. So I was able to do power off 180s to the right and power off 180s to the left. Another fun experience I had.
And Chris, you just might let your listeners know that aren't really familiar with it, those are actually accuracy type landings.
Yep.
That are an important part of the commercial check ride.
Yep. Very true. So yeah, let me go back to that. So this is a something you're tested on in the commercial pilot PTS is essentially when you're in the pattern, the power is pulled, the engine isn't shut down, but the power is reduced to idle, and it's up to the pilot to manage the glide and the energy of the airplane and flaps and whatever else is at his disposal, mostly the path of the airplane, to come down and land within 200 feet of the touchdown target. So that is your touchdown target and forward 200 feet, not 200 feet either side. So if you were to land before that, that would be a disqualification. If you were to land, say, 300 feet, that would also be a disqualification. So that is what you're practicing. And it's actually something that I would recommend people do as early as they can, because what happens when you're flying the airplane in both this environment and, say, in slow flight, is you really get to know the flight profile of the airplane. And I felt like with that one flight, I learned so much about how the aero flies that helped me throughout the rest of my time with the aero, even into the other maneuvers. So it was definitely helpful. Another experience that I had up in Utah, and this is kind of a quick fun one, is I flew from Ogden to Logan, and I did my private pilot in Logan at Utah State University. And I went up there and stopped by Leading Edge Aviation and said hi to some of my friends there, Clint to be specific. And then I also went over to Utah State and saw their new operation. It just so happened that after I was done flying there, which I flew steam gauge 152s and
and really old 172s. They got all brand new airplanes. They got new hangars and all these upgrades. So I was one of the last classes to go through with the old stuff. And it's cool to see these younger kids going through with all these new airplanes, but still with a very good level of professionalism. And they were kind enough to give me a tour around there. So it's kind of nostalgic seeing my old stomping grounds and where I truly fell in love with aviation and started to learn to fly. There's just so many good memories there in Logan. And that was grounding, you know, that was grounding to the base of who I am in connecting that. Of course, I wasn't doing maneuvers all the way there or anything that you could even call that wasted engine time, if you will, but it was absolutely helpful in kind of connecting the dots for me. Okay. So Michael, coming back down to California, we're kind of back into the thick of things of you and I and Ariel and Bill getting into ground lessons again. So why don't you kind of just to start things off here, why don't you tell people a little bit about Ariel and your process with him and how that has been integrated with me? Because I think that's a really smart thing on your part as his instructor to kind of integrate him into what I was trying to accomplish.
Sure. Ariel is a young man. In fact, he just turned 21 recently, and he's going to school, making sure that he gets his education. And he's been around airplanes for a long time. His father was a pilot, but it was something that he's been sort of on and again, off again, as far as what he wanted to do. So after he got his commercial, he went ahead and started flying a jump airplane for a skydiving operation here in Camarillo. And he flew well over 1,000 hours in these raddy old 182s. They were always tandem jumps. So there'd be four people, off he'd go up to 8,000 feet, throw them out the door, and back they would come. And so he did that over 1,000 hours. And then in the time too, there's been a group of young people around this airport that have networked together and continued to fly together and have owned 150s together, or he happened to own his own 150 and realized that was kind of crazy. But nonetheless, he decided, and he'd been talking to me about it for quite some time, that he did want to become a CFI. And so my requirement for anybody that wants to do that, first of all, is that they've passed both the CFI, the knowledge test, and also the fundamentals of instruction. And that's kind of skin in the game. Because if you've gone to the extent to take those two tests, that's a fair amount of commitment. And so that's really important. So then Ariel came in, and really my process is that I know he can fly an airplane. I've seen him fly. I've had the opportunity to fly with him. So I know his skills are good. What you really want to find out is, can they teach? Do they know how to teach? Can they really sit there and talk about, you know, how an airplane flies in a language that doesn't sound like they tried to memorize the Pilot's Handbook of Aeronautical Knowledge or the Airplane Flying Handbook or any number of documents.
Mm-hmm.
So that the process is for them to become teachers, or to at least start the process of learning how to communicate to another human being instead of sounding like they just memorized the book. And that's where the relationship really starts with somebody like Ariel and somebody like you. Because in fact, I think you discovered in the process that you knew an awful lot and that you were able to contribute in his process. And when there was one day where the two of you flew and you came back to the office, and I asked him to go ahead and brief that flight. And it was extraordinary, because here he was just being Ariel, just being somebody that felt comfortable in what had just happened. And he was able to explain in real comfortable terms what the two of you had gone through and what he saw and what was good and what needed to be improved. And that was the whole point. And I've used that with him to say, okay, this is what is required. This is what Ariel needs to sound like, not like Ariel trying to repeat page 37 in some book.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the process that I go through with. And I've used it numbers and numbers of times with people wanting to become flight instructors. They've got to understand the material, but they need to be able to communicate it in a way that the individual can learn it with excitement and not have their eyes glaze over and have somebody reading or, you know, repeating to them what they just read in their book. It's an application of the fundamentals is what it is, in a way that you can go out, teach it in the plane, teach it on the ground, and then go fly it in the airplane. And that's the process. And that was the process that I was using between the two of you.
And so it's pretty neat because it was dual purpose, right? Ariel was getting time in the airplane with me on the ground. We were doing oral stuff together. The oral part of the check ride, we were doing that sort of stuff together. And it just worked out really well because he could get experience. I could get experience for the commercial, and I could also see the CFI process and, you know, jumping ahead what I would be going through. And so again, if I had just done everything week one, a lot of these experiences I wouldn't have had, and I wouldn't have come as far as I did, with having those times to fly with Ariel and with Bill as well. And it just worked out really well that way.
Yeah. Yeah.
So coming back in, when I got back to California, the weather had improved, the airplane was fixed, and that's when I was able to fly with Ariel more. Again, Bill and I flew as well. And it's cool to see their perspectives, even versus your perspective. And just everyone has something to share, one little bit of knowledge that helped me. And I just thought that was incredibly helpful throughout the process. Go ahead.
No, go on.
I'm just going to say I got a little more solo time as well, back and forth and getting used to the airspace. And of course, by that time, I was used to the airplane, and everything just kind of started to click. So I actually flew with Ariel and Bill first. I think I actually flew with Ariel twice before I ended up flying with you again for what would be the third time, but the first time coming back. So why don't you quickly compare between our first flight together and what you saw the second time we flew together and how different that was?
Yeah, well, remember what I had said to you is that you understand between our time together, the time on the ground, the time with Bill and with Ariel, and I think Zach was involved in there as well.
I actually didn't meet Zach, unfortunately.
Oh, you never did. Okay. Yeah. Okay. So that said, what I said to you was, you come to me when you're ready to show me that your skills have been refined to a level that you can go take a check ride.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the way that I normally handle it, because relative to the commercial, it really is a situation. If you're struggling, you should ask for help. If you're not struggling and you're just going to go out there and polish it up, then go polish it up. Mm-hmm. And when you're ready, come to me and let's say, okay, let's go fly. And then I'll say, okay, fine, let's go. And what I'm going to do is that I'm going to go ahead and watch you. And in fact, if you recall, I said, just take me out and show me the check ride.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't ask you to do certain things. I just said, go show me the check ride.
Mm-hmm.
And so we'd go out and we did eights on pylons and we did some of the things that you felt you needed help with.
Mm-hmm.
In retrospect, you probably could have had a little bit more help with a couple of other maneuvers.
Yep.
but you know, that was at that particular point, you were doing them within standard. Were they as solid as they could or should have been? Yeah, they were within standard. Now, we've got to remind everybody that the standards are like C-level work.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, nobody likes, well, maybe somebody does, but not, at least I know you don't
do
C-level work.
Nope.
Yeah, but that doesn't matter. The reality is we went out and you were just a different pilot. You were more relaxed, first of all.
Yep.
You were certainly more comfortable with me at this particular point because we had already gone through all of the various adjustments and challenges and things that you go through with when you're trying to work with somebody.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you wanted to do well and you wanted to make sure that I knew that you were all the things that I know you are. And so that does get in the way of the training. And when you have a relationship like we had, I mean, it was still not, you know, kissy face time, but we were still, you know, I had a lot of respect for you and I wanted the best for you.
Mm-hmm.
And probably a lot of times when you want the best for somebody, you might even squeeze them a little harder.
Right. Exactly.
And that's what was going on. So, but I was expecting to see give me the best you got. And that's what we were looking for. And in fact, it was pretty much there. And if you said to me, I'm there, I had enough confidence in your decision making, and I didn't see anything that would not tell me that that wasn't the truth.
Mm-hmm.
It was pretty much there.
Right. And I would say that whether it's a check ride or whether it's a flight with you, and I kind of joked that I was more nervous to fly with you than I was on my check ride.
Then I did my job, if that's the case.
Yeah. So, you know, I think that between the two, if you go in with a sense of real confidence, and I'm not talking about fake confidence or bravado or anything like that, but where I am acting like the pilot in command, then I think there's a feeling and a difference that you notice in that type of flying and that a DPE would notice in that type of flying and saying, okay, this person really does have control of the airplane, control of the situation. They know where they are. They know where they're going. They can handle things thrown at them like emergency procedures. You know, when you and I got over Santa Paula, we had no warning on when the power off 180 was going to be. You just pulled the power and said, okay, power off 180. And I had more warning in my check ride than I did on that. So, but it all worked out fine, right? I actually,
yeah, absolutely.
I nailed that landing as well. And it just, and really I came into this second week where I should have been that first time that I came. And so this is what you were actually looking for, is that polish up of my skills, which at that time I still did need some polish and still do need some polish.
Sure. And, you know, I think a lot of that reflected itself though, and I'm probably jumping forward here on you a little bit, where, and we can talk about this as we can kind of back up, but the challenge of trying to get your check ride done in the face of a lot of things that were not in under our control at all.
Yep.
But, you know, the flight that you took up to Santa Maria to try to get the check ride in with the DPE, mm-hmm. while he was up there so that you could go home.
Right.
And, you know, the fact that you went up there, the weather was not great, but you went up there to an airport that you hadn't been to,
mm-hmm.
an airport that has its own challenges because of the winds and things that are there. But you go up there and you meet with Dennis. You'd already had the oral with him,
yep.
so he knows
yep.
who you are. And then you go and you're getting ready to go take the flight, and Mother Nature dumps a great big one right on the top of the airport, and you wave it off, go out, send Dennis home in his car, and you sat there and figured out a way to get on top of all of this legally, mm-hmm. and get home.
Mm-hmm.
And you did that, and that's an indication of what you were working for as a commercial pilot.
Yep.
You had good decision-making, and you proved that to yourself.
Mm-hmm. And I proved it to Dennis, too, even though it was uncomfortable to pull out to the runway. And what we're talking about here is I had an opportunity to fly with the DPE, but it wasn't in Camarillo. I actually had to fly north to Santa Maria to get up there. And then I would take the check ride that afternoon. Dennis and I got in the airplane. We taxied out to the runway. I pulled the airplane around to kind of turn it into the wind right there in the run-up area, did some of my run-up. And then as soon as I was about to call for my takeoff, or transfer to tower to talk, to take off, there's this wall of water in front of the runway. It's just this huge downpour. And so of course I pull up for a flight. I look at the radar. I notice that there's stuff going on there. And I mean, at this point, I almost had the laugh because this is just how things went throughout the process, right? It's Murphy's Law. What can go wrong does go wrong. And so these thunderstorms were there. They were not reported. They weren't very heavy intensity, but they were green to yellow and enough for me to say, okay, we're not going. And not only that, but the visibility wasn't good. But these thunderstorms were not reported. It wasn't anywhere. They weren't even in the, they weren't in the TAFs. They weren't in the METARs. They weren't anywhere. And it's like they just popped up around the runway when I was about to take my check ride. So I made the decision to come in, and then Dennis and I hung out for a little bit and decided it was better that he just head home. And then I was going to try to find a way out. And eventually that weather did clear, and I was able to find a hole out of there. And then once I got to the coast by Santa Barbara, it just totally, it was totally open. I you know, I could turn on course and things. But that's just kind of the way things went, you know. And rewinding a little bit, Dennis had a turkey sandwich that really got him. It got to him. He got food poisoning, and he was basically down for a week. So there's a week there where I was essentially ready, but the DPE was sick to the point where he was actually in the hospital. And as a very good friend of yours, Michael, we were actually concerned about him, and obviously his priority, or the big priority, is his health. And so we were even investigating, you know, going with another DPE, but, thankfully all that worked itself out. But again, another challenge, the DPE went down.
And let me just make a comment in terms of, for anybody that's out there, I think it's important that your flight instructor, if they're doing this on a regular basis, should have relationships with a number of the designated pilot examiners, because it's very, very important to understand the individuals that you are sending your pilots to for testing, because personalities make a big difference. And so there's one personality that may not work for a pilot that you're training, but there's another DPE in the area that would be an ideal match, because it's chemistry. It's about, they're, you know, in the real world, they're all supposed to be the same, but they're
right.
Not.
They're not.
They're
no.
Not going to test the same. They're not going to ask the same questions. Their expectations are going to be different. And, but the reality is, it's about the personalities. If I'm comfortable enough sending one of my pilots to one of the DPEs, then I know it's a nice match. And if something happens, it happens. And most of the DPEs are really great people. They want the individual to pass. They don't like having to fail them. And the reality is, most of them have a passing slip sitting on the desk. And the pilot training comes in the room, and for one reason or another, either decides that they're not going to pass, or something just happens and it's freak and they screw up. And the next day they go and get the check ride done, and they're finished.
Right.
And the examiners want you to pass.
Mm-hmm.
And but it's important that the flight instructors have relationships with the DPEs, because it's a relationship. We have to know, we need feedback on how we're doing. Are we teaching the right things? Are we getting the pilots ready to come to you? And if we're comfortable that that's the case, then there's no problem. But if we don't know what the expectations are, if we're missing something, if we're not following the guidelines of the ACS or the PTS, or creating people that are ready to pass, then that's on us. And it's part of our responsibility. So it's really good that if the pilot, if your instructors that you're working with have relationships with the examiners that they're sending you to. And not just, hi, I know you, but, you know, they get together from time to time and they share ideas. I know I it's a rule that after any of my pilots have a check ride, I get feedback. What did I do well? What could I do better? Where am I what's going on? How can
right.
we do?
That's a good
and
point.
And that's critical.
Yeah. And I would say also, if for unknown reasons or reasons that can't be specified, your instructor has a strained relationship with a DPE and you're new with the instructor, that may be a sign that the instructor isn't doing work the DPE likes. And also it's very difficult for, I would think, new instructors to have a relationship with the DPE. But like you said, I mean, that's a really great example and a lesson to me is keep the feedback loop going. Recognize how you as a professional can grow, because really the DPE in a way is testing you as an instructor as well, not just your student. They're testing where you got the student and what things, you know, could improve. So, and while of course that's the instructor isn't the one at the controls and isn't the pilot in command, there is a certain level of information to draw from that I think would be incredibly beneficial. So that's a really good point.
Yeah. Well, a coach can't go out and play,
yep.
But a coach can get you mentally tough and can do the kinds of things that need to be done. But ultimately the coach doesn't get to play the game. Mm-hmm. And ultimately if a student doesn't do well, it's on me. If they do well, it's they did it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's ultimately the way that I manage it always, because in the end, if it doesn't go well, then I did something, it was on me. Mm-hmm. But the other side of the equation is, you made a statement about an instructor can't, you know, if they're new at it, can't really know the DPE. Uh-huh. Sure they can. They can go make a point of going to see the DPE and, you know, buying them a cup of coffee or spending some, or a Red Bull or whatever it may be, to spend time with them to help them understand what they should be doing in order to get their pilots ready to fly with this particular examiner and the kinds of things that are important to the examiner. And it's a relationship. It's very, very important relationship between instructors and DPEs. And the other thing I would say is that I always try to introduce my pilots to the DPE early in the process so that they have a sense of the individual that they're going to be working with, because now it's less of a mystery.
Right. And I can say that I didn't have that opportunity with Dennis and that it would have helped. But Dennis was sick. He was incredibly
was
busy.
Impossible.
There was all sorts of stuff going on. It just didn't line up. So
I totally
understood.
Yeah, didn't line up.
Yep. I am going to do another full episode just talking about specifically my thoughts and experience during the check ride. But why don't you and I talk about the things that happened around the check ride? So on the Monday, I had gone through my oral. I passed that. We were waiting for the weather to clear. That didn't quite happen. And so we had to do a discontinuance to another day. And then it ended up being that Sunday. So a week later that I was able to take the practical test. But tell everyone or share with me your thoughts, because I'm not sure I've even asked you this yet. Why did you want to go with me to Oxnard? Why did you want to fly with me there? I know we did a little bit in between. And then I think I already know the answer to what did you want to experience after I was done at the check ride? So take us through your thought process on wanting to come along for the check ride, not necessarily sitting in the back during it, but being there for everything around it.
Okay. Well, when you had the oral, it was, if I recall, it was my wife and I were celebrating our anniversary, right?
Yep.
And so I couldn't be there.
Mm-hmm.
I try to be present at every check ride that my pilots take, just to come in, make sure that I did my paperwork correctly, that if there are any problems at all, that I can correct it right there,
mm-hmm.
and make sure that nothing gets in the way of that check ride.
Right.
So that is part of it. So the reality is I didn't get to do that with you.
Yep. Because you had other obligations.
Had other obligations.
Yep.
But the other thing is that I wanted a chance to fly. And so that Sunday, when we knew you were going over to Oxnard, I wanted a chance to fly with you. But the other thing is that I put you in the right seat as though a flight instructor.
Yeah.
I was sitting there saying, you fly it in the right seat. I want you to have this opportunity. And I was mixing things up a little bit on you to kind of move your head around a little bit, kind of loosen you up a little bit,
mm-hmm.
to go on over. Mm-hmm. Now, when we went over, you wanted to go up and do some stall series.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and I'll share this. I didn't like what I saw.
Right.
But I will tell you, this was the day of the check ride.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to... At that point, there was no way unless it was just an absolute safety of flight issue, that I'm going to say anything.
Right.
Because at that particular point, I didn't want to get in your head. Mm-hmm. I didn't want you to think that it wasn't there.
Right.
And we know that, in fact, you could have done a little bit better on your stall series when you were on your check ride, but they weren't bad.
Right.
You still were within tolerances. But, you know, what I want to see you go there is that it's you're tight, that right. you're just really on it.
Mm-hmm.
But the other reason that I wanted you to be there, frankly, was that, you know, that, you know, I hadn't had a chance to see Dennis since he had been ill.
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't seen him for a while simply because his schedule and my schedule are such. And I just wanted to be there and say hello to him.
Mm-hmm.
And just remind him that, hey, this is one of my babies, and I want you to take care of him. And I didn't mean that in a bad way. Just remember, we've worked really hard to get here, and I want to be here when you get back, and I want to know that he's done well. And that's why I rode over there with you. It was an hour and a half, so who cares?
Right.
It was my day off, and I wanted to be there.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I chose to go there. But mostly because I always want to be there when one of my pilots takes a check ride. I want to know if, in fact, they did well or where they... So we briefed right there after the check ride in that room. And so I had a good chance to know of what was good and what was bad. And there we were. And that's why.
And that was incredibly beneficial to me as well, is to do that debrief afterward. And, you know, if I may say, it goes... To the listeners, this is an example of that professionalism that you're looking for from an instructor who cares enough to do things like this, where they have a relationship with the DPE, where they value that feedback after the fact, where they make sure that the student gets off to a good foot during the actual check ride process. So those are the sort of intangible things that you look for in an instructor, that, you know, they aren't necessarily on a job description or anything, but those are the signs that your instructor cares. So I'll just point that out. The check ride, and again, I want to talk about this more in depth in another episode, but the check ride was not perfect. There were things I definitely could have done better. There were things I did pretty well. There are things I did okay at. But I think overall, I showed enough competence that that Dennis, you know, saw that I was fitting of the commercial rating. So that's how everything kind of aligned and transpired. And I was in a headspace and am in a headspace of, I kind of joke about this with others, is if there's anything I've learned, it's that I have so much to learn. And so now, moving forward, already having had some of that CFI experience and seeing the process take place with you and Ariel and Bill, is now I get to roll right into the next thing. Don't let any rust form. Keep the flying skills up. Definitely, you know, get heavy into the knowledge part of this, because that's what matters. And then start practicing the teaching on a regular basis and really get into that. So,
the one thing I would say to that, though, is that you just be you.
Yep.
I can't emphasize that enough. As a teacher, just be who you are. You say it in the way that you need to say it. Say it in a way that is truly you. Say it in a way that your pilot training understands exactly what you're saying, and they know exactly what that this is just a real opportunity, mm-hmm. and not try to be anything or anybody other than who and what you are.
Right, and we had a ground session with Ariel, where Ariel was teaching us, and this happened to be on one of the days where I was waiting for weather to clear or Dennis's schedule to clear. So I had the great opportunity to be the student for several sessions like that. And Ariel is an incredibly smart guy. And, you know, he can quote chapter and verse on things that I've barely touched on. So he's so in depth that way. And it's interesting to see the process of his growth, where he is learning, as you say there, to be himself. And those are the things that you're bringing out of him. And we had a really great discussion about that in one of our sessions is, you know, just be who you are, and those valuable things of your personality and who you are show through, and it just really works out well. You know, I noticed that Bill was very much that way. Bill is very much himself in how he teaches, and it's so easy to latch onto as a student when the instructor is like that. And you're the same way. You know, you are very much yourself.
Well, you know, that's what happens as we mature.
Right.
Okay. And, you know, and Bill's 40, and he made a decision to come into this, but he's been a teacher in a lot of other areas. Mm-hmm. I mean, he was one of these guys that lived on the mountain mm-hmm. all winter long and, you know, was on the ski patrol and taught and did all of that. And he's also loves to surf. You know, these mm-hmm. are the kinds of things. And he just flowed that way. He was not a good test taker at all. It was his, you know, but I will tell you his terms. I knew that he would be a fabulous flight instructor simply because he's grounded.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think often we get too stuck in, really in any rating, we get too stuck in the nuts and bolts and even the PTS and even the written and all of those things. If we would just find our own passion and desire to dig deeper and study those things in a passionate way rather than out of requirement, we would go much further, you know? And I think that definitely helped me after that first few days we had together where I took an intentional personal pivot and said, okay, I'm not having fun. Here is what I need to have fun again, because I can't learn until I'm having fun. And I would say from then on out, even though sometimes things were difficult and we were waiting around or this was going wrong or that was going wrong or this was challenging, I was having fun still, and I was enjoying the journey and I was enjoying the grind. And, you know, I think that speaks to a level of professionalism, and this is kind of getting into, I guess the last topic I want to discuss with you is a level of professionalism in how a student at any level approaches flying, because flying at the end of the day is a very serious thing. And this is, you know, Dennis actually talked to me about this, and, he was kind of preaching to the choir about, how I have a family and there are certain things I don't, you know, I shouldn't do to take risks and so on and so forth. But approaching training in a professional way. So I think we've touched on some of these things, but if you can, Michael, one thing I noticed about you just being around you, not necessarily 24 hours a day, but every day for several weeks on end, is you are still learning at your level and you're very passionate about the learning. So can you share a little bit about that and kind of what your process is in unfolding more knowledge for yourself, keeping yourself sharp, and also, I guess to a certain extent, keeping things uncomfortable for yourself? Because I noticed that you're just always striving to learn more. So tell us more about that level of professionalism that you're trying to seek.
That's a great question, because I was thinking about how I would answer that when I saw where you were going with that particular question. And, you know, the one thing that I know is that I'm responsible in this particular case, and it's my life has always been like this. I've always had a process by which I always forced myself into new learning situations. But in terms of what we're talking about, I realize that somebody is coming to me and looking at me as a professional and paying me to guide them where they're going. And I do not want to be somebody who didn't give more than what the individual expected. So a lot of it has to do with just being wanting to provide value added in every relationship, regardless of whether it's knowledge, regardless of whether it's kindness, regardless of whether it's a smile, regardless of just value added. I watched my father do that, running a gas station and a sporting goods store for 50 years, and I watched how it worked. And so that was always important to me. But so when you came to me or anybody comes to me, I know I can't possibly have all the answers. I know at my age, I can't possibly remember everything that I've known because it's just not the way our cognitive skills work. It's in there someplace,
right?
But you've got to continually bring it back up.
Right.
And so it's very, very important to understand that you're going to ask questions that I don't have an answer to. And if you do, we're going to look it up together.
Mm-hmm.
Or somebody's going to want to know something, and I may not know right this minute. And I will tell you, most of the really great teachers out there that teach are only a step ahead of their students. And sometimes they're scared to death that somebody's going to come in there and be three steps ahead of them. And so the reality is that we always have got to continually be focused on trying to get better. And I learn something every single time I'm with anybody, whether they're a student pilot, whether they're a professional pilot in ATP, and I get the opportunity to work with them. It's always about just being knowing one thing. We don't know everything. We know very little. And the reality is that we just continue to be open to the learning experience. And that's kind of how I approach it, because
mm-hmm.
I just want to be as knowledgeable as I can be, knowing that I don't know very much.
Right. And I think that's the biggest things I gained from this process, other than just the fact that I have my commercial rating now, but the biggest things I gained were not a maneuver I learned or a piece of technical knowledge that I gained, but it was the difficulty of the process and the intense focus on having to continually come back to center, refocus myself and say, okay, that didn't go well. We need to wait longer. Now we're going to try this. We're going to brush ourselves off, get back up, go back at it again. Things like that. When those challenges come up, and having the tenacity to continually brush those things off as I'm going through, you know, I'd like to think that, or actually I don't like to think about it, but I can imagine that there are some people out there that would actually give up during that process and just kind of throw their hands in the air and say, you know, the weather isn't good, the airplane is broken, this isn't working out right now, I'm just going to go home. And something that I faced as we were going throughout this process, as my departure date from California kept getting pushed back, and even to the point where my family had left without me, is I got to the point where on my drives back and forth to the airport, having, you know, maybe faced another disappointment that it wasn't going to be that day, or it wasn't going to be that weekend, or whatever, I came to this point where I was very, very clear with myself that I was not leaving California without that rating. And that clarity came in instances like that, actually two or three different times. But the final time it happened was actually the Saturday night before I, you know, the Saturday night, and then the Sunday afternoon, I actually got my rating. But that was after I had gone to Santa Maria, spent the entire day flying up there, had great hope that it was going to happen. And I did that, you know, against the fact that there were 15 to 25 knot winds up there. And I'd never practiced in winds like that. And I was taking that as part of the challenge. And none of that worked out. And then I came home and, I said to myself, this is happening. I'm not giving up. And I'm doing it one way or another. And it was, I almost think that that is like the spiritual place that I had to get to as a pilot, if you will, before I was blessed with the weather and the day and the time and all the things aligning for me to actually get it done. because once I had come to that place of clarity, it just seemed like everything literally opened up, which is kind of interesting. And I think it's a mark of professionalism. I'm not saying that necessarily giving myself kudos, but I think it's a mark of professionalism when someone can go through that refiner's fire, if you will, and come out the other side, having not giving up, having persisted, et cetera.
Well, there's enough stories out there in the world of people who never gave up and the success that they had and the commitment that they had, even sometimes if they had to wave it off for a while and come back at it, and you did it. And if you'll recall, there were a number of times when I said to you, "You ready to go home?"
And you would say, nope.
Because you'd be whining and you'd be a little bit disappointed. And I said, "Well, fine, go home." And you weren't going to do it.
Nope.
And you succeeded. And this will serve you well when you go to Wisconsin to work on your CFI. And, you know, you're a long way down the path right now. More so than you know.
Mm.
But, you know, you've got to get the FOI done now, and you've got to get the FIA done and get all that finished. And so you've got a few things left to do before you go down to go to Sun and Fun and then find yourself up there in Oshkosh, Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And that's, I'm already starting on that. I've been working through the aviation instructor's handbook, learning about that. And even things in there that we had talked about during this conversation, I can point back to that manual and say, okay, well, he's talking about instructing adults where they're in charge of their schedule. They are self-directed, goal-oriented, et cetera. So I can already point to things there that I've learned. And truth be told, I actually love learning. And I think it's important for all of us to find our way of loving to learn. You know, what makes our clock tick, in other words?
Yeah. Well, you've checked off another box on the way to where you want to be, and it will serve you well. And it's just like anything. It's just that wonderful, you get up in the morning and you've got something to learn all the way along the path, and you are here now. And you do a beautiful job of sharing your experiences and the experience of others with your listeners. And it's a wonderful gift you share with them. And I think that you should be commended for how well you do it.
I appreciate
that. Because
you've done this
a lot. And for those of people that stick with you and listen to you, you're a treasure trove.
I appreciate that. So as we kind of part here after our experience together and thinking of those listeners that are listening to this show, if you would take a couple moments or minutes to speak to those listeners directly and give them any sort of advice that you can give them over your years of experience, you know, what is it you would tell them in terms of those just getting started, maybe those coming back or those looking to improve and build up and make a career of this? What is the sort of advice you would give to people in that space?
If the flame or there's an ember burning, there should be no reason that it should be extinguished, even though sometimes it may be tamped down pretty much to the point where it may be gone.
Mm-hmm.
But it never goes away. If it has to do with aviation or if it has to do with art, if it has to do with any passion that anybody has in their life, I would say follow your heart, follow your passion, and if you want it, you'll just have to do whatever it takes to get there. And look for people along the way that support you and that are not an obstruction. Mm-hmm. Find the people that will carry you and help you go forward. That's what I would say. I've had the gift of working with 65-year-old pilots who wanted to. I'll share one story quickly and we'll call it quits.
Yep, no problem.
One man that I worked with, he wanted to be a Navy pilot. He got chosen to be a Navy pilot. He went to flight school and he failed a particular test. And instead of sucking it up and doing a little bit more training, he quit because he didn't want to fail. And for the rest of his life, and a magnificent man and a school teacher and just a sweet, sweet guy, when he got to be 65 years old, there was no way he was not going to become a pilot. And he did it. And it wasn't easy.
Yeah.
But he did it. And I've got all kinds of stories like that, young and old, and people that with learning challenges, dyslexia, ADD, all of those things are all on the same spectrum, that they never gave up and they got it. And they're some of my dearest friends because they just wanted it. And we found ways to make it happen. Mm-hmm. And that's what I would say. Don't let anybody get in the way. Just find people that will support you.
That's fantastic advice. I love that. I love that imagery of an ember burning, because those that have fallen in love with aviation, it only happens once and then you're done. You're always going to be fascinated with airplanes once you start that journey. And while there are things that are more important than flying in one's life, say family and love and things like that, it's safe to say that this is a career path that is fairly unique, and a passion that is fairly unique. Maybe it's not even a career, but it's a passion that's fairly unique in how vividly and how completely it grabs people. And there are so many challenges. I mean, one huge blessing of this process for me, of having it be just totally challenging from top to bottom, is I can empathize with many people who are, you know, facing financial problems or health problems or family problems or whatever it is. Those things, you know, roadblocks getting in the way of them achieving their dream. And to at least a small degree, I can empathize with those people. So for that, and for this process, and for your friendship and you showing up in this process and being one of those people, one of those mentors who means so much to me, I'm just so very grateful to the process and to you. And like I shared with you the other day, I'm so grateful to have your name in my logbook and your name on that commercial ticket. And that's just something that I'm always going to treasure.
Well, thank you very much. That's very kind of you. And I was humbled when you said that, and I continue to be humbled.
And soon enough, I'll be back having dinner with you and your beautiful wife. They're in Ventura. I don't think it's going to be that long.
No, I'll be looking forward to it.
All righty.
Come on down.
All right, Michael. I really appreciate all you've done, all you continue to do, and I very much look forward to the future.
All right, Chris, thanks, and we'll see you, I guess, probably our next paths will cross AirVenture, huh?
Yep. Sounds good. Or, if not then sooner.
Or sooner. That'd even be better. All right, man.
All right. Thanks,
Michael. Thank you very much.
Yep,
goodbye.
See you. Bye.
Bye.
Join us next week for another exciting topic or interview with a great guest. Spread the Aviator Cast message. Please review Aviator Cast on iTunes or submit an audio question for the show at aviatorcast.com. All iTunes reviews and audio questions that are aired on the show will get an official Aviator Cast t-shirt. You can write Aviator Cast directly on aviatorcast.com, where you can interact with the Aviator Cast community, or write Aviator Cast at me@aviatorcast.com. We'd love to hear from you. For more information on angle of attack simulation training videos for FSX, X-Plane, and more, go to www.flyaoamedia.com. If you are looking for professional aviation training video services and other media, inquire at www.angleofattackpro.com. Now, for the final release clearance, back to Chris Palmer.
All right, so a huge thanks goes out to Michael, of course, my dear friend. Love you more, Michael. It was so great to be down there in Camarillo and experience all of the aviation stuff around that airport, you know, seeing Rick and his dog and dealing with little things and jousting with friends and Red Bulls in the fridge and going to Waypoint for lunch, dealing with the weather, having dinner at your house. It was just such a great, great experience. And I always treasure those memories. And, you know, that is really what aviation is about, everyone. It is about people. Yes, the flying is absolutely awesome. And there's just nothing that can replace flying, even by yourself solo. It's such an amazing experience. However, if I didn't have anyone to share this with, if I didn't have Michael to have this great commercial training experience, and I say great, not that it was easy or fun all the time. I say great because it was so rich in its experiences. If I didn't have people to share this with, aviation wouldn't mean much to me. It would just be one of those other things. So the people in aviation is truly what makes it the best. So I am so honored to be associated with people like Michael. And of course, also very honored to be associated with people like you, the listeners. And I'm so grateful for you guys. You guys come week after week to this podcast. I know that you have many challenges in your own training, in your own life, things that are pushing you one direction or the other, either to or from aviation, or after this experience, I just know how much of a struggle it is. So you guys are awesome. Keep the dream alive. Keep pushing toward that. You have to push through these boundaries. It is not easy. It takes some cojones, let's say that, to go through this process and really push yourself and ignore the things that are trying to get in your way, or at least recognize them and say, okay, this challenge is trying to prevent me from achieving my dream. How am I getting past this challenge? And just continually going through that process. I faced that in such a rapid time doing my commercial training and just had a deeper empathy for the many things that people go through when they are trying to achieve their aviation dreams. So I know many of you write in and you're excited about getting started. You're excited about just hearing some fun aviation nerdiness every now and again with Aviator Cast. But I do want you to know I am very aware of who you are. I honor who you are and where you are in the process. And if there's anything I can do to help, as always, you can write me@aviatorcast.com. I write back to everyone that writes me. It may take me a little bit of time sometimes because I have such a busy schedule doing other things, but I always, always write back. Those are the valuable things that I get to do in my life is be associated with wonderful people like Michael Phillips and you. So that is it for this episode of Aviator Cast. The commercial journey isn't quite over. Now we go into the check ride again, as I said, and we will finish up there. So that will come on the next episode. And then I think I need to drum up something special for episode 100. Something cool has to happen there. So I'm not sure exactly what that'll be yet. Maybe it'll just be, hey, what's next for Aviator Cast? What's next for Angle of Attack? But that's got to be a big centennial celebration. All right, everyone. I appreciate it. Until next time, throttle on. 5-8 is ready. 5-8
is the shoreline. Turn left heading 235. Maintain 2,000. Runway 25 right. Clear for takeoff.
Clear for takeoff. 25 right. United 580.